Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're going to be talking weather and climate today. Last time we talked about the weather, Hurricane Harvey was just starting to dissipate, and we've had three more since then. The weather guys are going to be talking about what's causing these unusual weather patterns, all the heat we've had here in the state. Steve Ackerman, director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW, and John Martin, professor and former chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW as well. And, you know, one of the guys that I turn to when I'm wondering what it's like outside is Chris Molina. And that's why he's with us today to talk a little bit maybe about the weather, but even more importantly about the fund drive. We're here today to raise the money that pays for the programs you enjoy, programs like this one. So I hope you'll give your support at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And Chris Molina, welcome. And what have we got for a goal today?
Well, Larry, first off, I should say that we had a beautiful performance last hour. 36 donors pledged during last hour. Thank you to everyone who gave. And this hour, we do have a new goal in mind. We're looking to repeat that performance. We're looking to get 35 pledges before the end of the hour. So help us meet this goal when you make your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And this is a big year for WPR. It's our centennial. You give the next 100 years a strong start. You can do that. Your support, it's going to ensure a bright future for the Wisconsin public radio programs that you rely on every single day.
And it's really people who listen, people just like you, who provide the most significant share of our budget here at WPR. You know, your donation, it's an investment in Wisconsin public radio. It's an investment in the Larry Mueller Show, programs that deliver the greatest value to you.
Your contribution keeps independent public service radio on the air for you and for your entire community. So I hope you'll give right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And one of the things I've noticed is we have some really generous people, Chris, listening.
We do have some really generous people, and we've got some really devoted people. We have people who love the show. We have people that love the station. You know, we live in a generous society. We've got generous listeners. We know that you're quick to help a neighbor or a coworker in need, and we chip in for good causes.
And you can continue the tradition of generosity when you support WPR right now. If you've never given before, you can become our next new member. Many new members give, 10 or 20 bucks a month, the amount totally up to you. The important thing is to make your first ever gift at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
Ready? One, two, three.
2017 is our centennial, and we have a special prize drawing for you this drive. Make a gift of any amount, and you'll be entered to win our Centennial Celebration Package. The winner will receive two VIP passes to our marquee event with NPR's Ari Shapiro on October 14th in Madison. You'll also get accommodations and meals. You don't have to donate to participate. You can send a postcard with your name, address, email, and phone to Centennial Celebration Drawing, Wisconsin Public Radio, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. Sustainers, you're automatically entered. Find all the details at WPR.org/drawing or enter by making a donation of any amount right now.
Do it right now. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your pledge during this fall membership drive. Larry Mueller here with Chris Molina, certainly asking for your support of WPR. And your gift, maybe it's $10 or $15 a month. Whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount.
And it's really easy to do. We know that you're eager to hear what the weather guys have to say this hour. And we don't want to take you away from the talk for too long. So we promise making a pledge is just going to take a few minutes of your time. And your contribution, it's going to give you so much back. So consider making a 9XM leadership gift of $100 a month or $1,200 a year or more.
And we have many people who do that every single drive. It comes down to less than $4 a day. It makes the talk, the news, the music, and entertainment that you count on from WPR possible. That 9XM leadership gift makes WPR possible today and for future generations. So give as generously as you can at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And you may be wondering, well, how much should I give? Well, here's the great part. That is up to you. Your contribution of any amount will be turned into great programs and programs that will keep you entertained all year long.
So make your pledge right now in the amount that's right for you at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552. When you do, and you will be playing an essential part in funding the programs you count on every single day. And have we made any progress?
Well, we do have that goal of 35 pledges for the hour. We don't have any pledges yet, but the pledge that we are looking for right now is you. We are looking for your pledge. And hey, if you've never given before, why not make that first ever gift to celebrate 100 years of Wisconsin Public Radio? Because 2017 marks 100 years. It's our centennial year. And listeners, you have made our first 100 years possible, and we're hoping that you'll make another 100 years possible. We can only do it with your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And this pledge drive, we're offering something very special. Ask for the latest WPR travel mug that features three Wisconsin landscapes where you might listen to WPR. It's yours when you give $20 a month at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552.
And what a great time to become a sustaining member. This means you'll set up ongoing, convenient monthly donations from your bank account or your credit card. Get started with that pledge of any amount and then set it and forget it. You don't have to worry about it. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Do it right now. Time to take a look at climate and weather with our weather guys who are with us once again today. Steve Ackerman, director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW-Madison, also a professor in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. Steve, welcome back.
It's great to be here again.
John Martin with us as well, professor, former chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. John, always great to see you.
Great to see you, Larry.
What would you like to know about hurricanes or other weather phenomena? I hope you'll join in our conversation. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Send an email to ideas@WPR.org, or you can post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. We always like to see your weather photos, so please feel free to do that. And, boy, I tell you what, this last month there have been four very large hurricanes. Historically, when was the last time so many powerful hurricanes hit in such a short period of time?
I would guess 2005,
probably. Yeah, we had Wilma,
Katrina,
Rita. Rita was the one in Houston. So there were three big ones that year, maybe even other small
ones.
Yeah,
that was a record year in terms of the total number. All of them hit land, but
yeah. Somebody asked me how do they actually form? What causes a hurricane to form?
Waves of variety of different types in the tropics can come off of equatorial Africa, the Saharan Desert of Africa. They can come out of the deep tropics just to the south of the continent. And then they propagate to the east or to the west, from the east to the west, which is exactly the opposite of the way storms move in the mid-latitudes. And as they do so, they're moving over exceptionally warm water. It's eager almost to evaporate vapor off its surface. And then thunderstorms conglomerate into organized weather systems that throw in the rotation of the earth, and they can become really devastating events.
Yeah.
Usually there's an antiseptic to them, and that is vertical changes in the wind direction, which are very toxic to the formation of hurricanes. And one of the things that's interesting about an active season is why such persistent and frequent lack of vertical wind shear in the environment.
Yeah. Well, we've seen some research that says that the Atlantic waters are warming. Does that mean we'll see more powerful hurricanes in the future?
Well, it's
hard to say, I suppose.
It's one of the factors, right?
It's
one environmental factor. And this year it's played some role. There's no doubt about that. The water's warmer and the depth of the warm water is exceeding the average. But it's not the only factor. And so, you know, we have to be careful when we say that just when you point to one thing, will that mean that this is the way it's going to go in the future? It's possible, but it's not certain.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting in some of the years where that depth of the water isn't that deep. You know, when a hurricane goes over it and then after it passes, you can see that the sea surface temperature dropped significantly.
Oh, man, that was...
But this year, that's just not happened because there's just so much warm water. When it mixes it up, it just brings warm water to the surface.
Right.
You know, in our weather, here in Wisconsin's been extremely hot and humid. The humidity, I wonder, is that have the hurricanes played a role in that?
My guess is they have. It always sounds like a dodge, but it's not. The atmosphere is complicated. There's lots of circumstances that lead to, you know, high profile events, including our heat wave. One of the factors is completely divorced from the tropics, and that's a feature out west that's kind of oriented itself in such a way as to get us very warm. But the tropical side of things on the eastern half of the continent has been a major factor. This air that we've been embedded in the last few days is tropical air. There's been an absolute rush of tropical air, ushered perhaps northward by the hurricanes over the eastern half of the United States over the last week. And that is certainly a factor.
That's three T-shirt weather.
It is. It's unbelievable. Gross. It's unbelievable.
What you were saying earlier about the hottest day of the year occurred.
The hottest day of the year in Madison occurred on the first day of autumn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that, I mean.
Milwaukee had its hottest day, I think, that day as well.
Yeah. So I don't think any of us have ever lived in a place where that's true. Now, that's really freaky.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
There it is.
Well, Tom in Minocqua has something that relates to this, I believe. Let's go there. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Larry. I'm just wondering, most weather patterns seem to go from west to east, and yet hurricanes come from east to west. So I'm wondering about that. And then also, how are you all able to track them so precisely?
So one way to track them precisely when they're over the oceans and the water is through satellites. And that's a lot of research that's actually done here in Madison, Wisconsin. And then once they get over land, they track them by radar. Still satellites, but radar as well becomes really well. Or when they get close enough to the coast, once they get to land, they begin to break up because they don't have that warm water to draw from.
Excuse me a minute. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Are they able to predict the track of the hurricane?
Yeah,
know days in advance where they're going to go.
So they have a good sense of days in advance in terms of heads up of a look at the storm that maybe even hasn't even organized yet into a hurricane. And then looking when they're out on the ocean again, using the satellite data with numerical weather prediction models, are able to predict where the track of the hurricane goes along with some error bars associated with that. And those error bars are getting better and better as time goes on. But the difficult thing is still forecasting what the intensity of that storm is going to be.
Yeah.
And they do it when they come out of the tropics and begin forming, just on the global wind patterns, they go from east to west. But as they begin to approach the subtropics, you know, around Florida, as well as the mid-latitudes, they curve, and then they begin to travel more in a west-to-east direction.
Yeah.
There we go.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling. And let's go to Ken in Mayville next. Hi, Ken.
Hey, how you doing, guys? I got that persistent question this time of year. Any idea on how the winter is going to be? For me, preferably super cold would be a good winter so it can knock down some of my Japanese beetle larvae.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, that is.
Actually,
yeah.
I didn't have too many Japanese beetles this year. Which
but
was
it's, been a, it's been a banner year for them.
Is that right?
Yeah. Wow.
And mostly because of the last winter was
so mild. Yeah.
Mild.
So mild, yeah.
Yeah. So what's any ideas?
I see that the question sometimes has something to do with what's going on in the tropical Pacific in terms of the El Nino or lack thereof. I don't know what's going on there this year. That probably leads me to believe there's nothing substantial evolving.
It's pretty neutral.
Okay,
area.
So yeah. Usually it kind of gets, even the scuttlebutt gets to all of us by the time we get to the end of September, but apparently it's a neutral Pacific Ocean. So that's, again, only one factor, but that and it tells us nothing. I mean, it's a non-determinative factor. However, I noticed just today that it's very, very cold in Siberia and central Russia right now, which is early for that. I don't know if it's accompanied by snowfall or not. It may just be a transient, too. It may not really persist. But I always start to look at the higher latitudes, both in Eurasia and then in Canada, to get an idea what the winter might look like for us, at least the early part of the winter. So I keep my eye on whether or not it's going to snow early in northwest Canada, early being, you know, mid-October or so. And if that happens, that chills the air as the sun's going down and, you know, days are getting shorter that far north. With this fresh snow on the ground, it's really easy to produce cold air. So if that starts to happen, and we can get reports of that, then I start to wonder if November and December won't be a little bit colder than normal. So far, there's no indication.
So that cold air can slip down over us.
It routinely does. It routinely
that's
does.
That's how we get our coldest air.
Exactly right.
Watch what's happening in Saskatchewan.
Yep, that's the thing. Right. That is definitely the thing.
Steve Ackerman and John Martin, our guests here as we talk weather and climate with them today. And it's also our Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. And Chris Molina joins us. Our goal is to keep bringing you topics like this one, where you learn about our weather patterns and why the recent hurricanes have been so strong. Your support helps make that happen. So I hope you'll give now. Any amount makes a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And have we added anyone yet, Chris?
We have gotten two pledges in the door, and we are still looking for 33 more pledges in the next 40 minutes to stay on track this hour. It is your pledge that we are looking for right now to help keep the Larry Mueller Show and Wisconsin Public Radio going strong. That's why we're asking for your gift of any amount, perhaps $5 a month, $10 a month, whatever amount you choose. It's the right amount. What matters is that you make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have several regulars on this particular program. Steve Ackerman and John Martin are certainly been doing this for
20 years.
20 years.
20 years. Well, I guess 20
makes
years.
Makes you wonder what you've been doing.
Yeah. You could call them regular, I guess, since they've been doing it for 20 years. Sandy Sawchuk's been with us at least 20 years, I think. Scott Craven, who's happy to speculate on your wildlife sightings. Our bird guy, Bill Volkert. Lots of good regulars.
And there's good reasons that we keep bringing these guests back over and over. It's because the conversations are great. Our guests cover topics near and dear to your hearts. They give you advice and ideas. And, you know, there are times where they explain complicated ideas in terms that we can understand. You heard John say it. He said the atmosphere is complicated. But he just explained it in a way that I felt like I had a much better understanding of, you know, how hurricanes form and why we're seeing them and how they're tracked. And, you know, because you've come to trust and appreciate these guests, because you've come to appreciate Larry, support this program with your dollars. It's easy. Just go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
You listen to WPR year-round, I'm betting, and maybe you should donate the same way you listen. You can become a sustaining member, make the decision once, and you'll be making ongoing contributions of, say, $10 or $20 a month for as long as you want.
It's really the best way, Larry, to support Wisconsin Public Radio, because your sustaining membership will always be current, and it cuts down on paperwork, and you don't have to think about it. You just sign up for the sustaining program, and you're done. So don't delay. Become a sustainer right now with your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now let's admit it, sometimes we spend money on silly things.
I spent money at a silent auction thinking I wouldn't win, and I did, and I won art. That was honestly a little creepy.
1976 MGB, that hasn't run in 20 years. I regret it, and I see it every day in my garage, and I regret it even more.
From creepy art to lemon cars, we've all made questionable decisions about how we spend our money. So it might be time to make a few smart ones. You can start by supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Listener support is the single largest source of funding at WPR. So make a sound investment with your gift to WPR right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller here with Chris Molina, asking for your support of WPR during this fall membership drive. Maybe your gift is $10 a month. Maybe it's $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount.
You know, and time flies, and maybe it's been longer than you realize since you last gave to WPR. We're asking you to keep your membership active.
Think of your support of WPR like you think of other services you rely on and pay for, maybe internet or your telephone. Renew your support of WPR right now. Make it an ongoing monthly gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You know, Larry, if you're curious about Wisconsin, if you're curious about the world around you, this is the program that you want to listen to, because The Larry Mueller Show covers topics like environmental and consumer issues, gardening, how-to topics, Wisconsin authors, Wisconsin food. You get a lot of great information, great practical information on this program, and it's possible because of your financial support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry and myself and his guests couldn't do this just by ourselves. themselves. It is you. You make the difference. That's why we're asking you to support this program and all the other great programs you enjoy on WPR with your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And it's easy to spend a buck a day or even more on things that are part of your routine. Maybe it's a cup of coffee or something from the vending machine, something like that.
Yeah, and consider the news, the information, and inspiration from Wisconsin and around the world that you get every day listening to WPR. So maybe a dollar a day, which comes out to about $30 or $31 a month, is just the right donation for you. Give a dollar a day right now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
We have 32 more pledges to go in the next half hour. So I hope you'll make that contribution right now. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Make your contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio and kind of a vote for this program as well.
And if you need a little extra inspiration, remember to ask for your new WPR travel mug. It's a stainless steel 16-ounce tumbler, really cool design on it. It is yours with your pledge of $20 a month or more. You can see a picture of it over at WPR.org and make your pledge while you're there, or call 888-202-2552.
Steve Ackerman is looking at that mug right now, thinking, he wants one. Wow. He's going to make his contribution and get one.
It's glued down to the table, though.
Well, I tell you what, we'll talk some more about that mug and some other things as well, but we'll turn our attention to climate and weather at the moment here with our two guests, John Martin, Steve Ackerman. Amy in Door County has a question for you about, we're going back to hurricanes for a minute here. Okay. Let's go there. Hi, Amy. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering if your guests have any information about the effect hurricanes have on the life in the sea, the coral reefs, the sea creatures. How are they affected by hurricanes?
Yeah, that's a good question, too.
That's a good question, and I think it's actually a great question because just the other day I was thinking the same thing, although I don't have an answer. But one of the things we were looking at is the satellite imagery over the Caribbean islands, you know, where there are coral reefs and things, as well as the Keys and southern Florida. Prior to the Hurricane Maria, I think it was, that went over it, and then post afterwards. And those shallow areas are, I mean, the sediment just gets whipped up on the bottom.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah.
And that whole area, the whole water quality just brightens up because of the sediment. So I'm sure, I would guess anyway, have done the fishing that I've done, where I've luckily caught fish in very sediment-laden waters. But I was wondering what happens to the bottom of it, you know? So if there are eggs in that bottom, I mean, clearly that bottom is all stirred up. So I think it's the bottom life that would have fell, as well as the coral reefs as well, because they get beat up pretty good.
Yeah, and the tropical storms do a really major service to parts of the ocean basins. They do a tremendous amount of ventilating. Steve mentioned this earlier in terms of thermal ventilating as well. And I think that has positive repercussions for you know, various types of biological activity in the oceans. Well, I'm not an expert on that either, but I think this, on the net, there's positive gains for the ventilation. Of course, there are individuals who suffer from it.
Yeah,
no
there's
doubt.
Always yeah, winners there's and losers.
Be, yeah, there's got to be individuals.
But
who
hurricanes
take a
have been
beating.
Around for a real long time, so
right.
I imagine sea life has been able to adapt.
Yeah, they're
to them.
Baked into the cake on that.
Yeah,
well, that's true. I was asking kind of selfishly because I enjoy snorkeling off of St. John, and I'm wondering, you know, what that's going to be like at this point.
So the you know, that sediment seemed to drop out pretty quick, or quickly. So I think in terms of snorkelers, a bigger concern is the acidification of the oceans as it takes up a lot of the carbon dioxide that we emit, because that is not good for the coral reefs.
Yeah, this is another good thing about hurricanes, perhaps, is that they might upwell water that's been out of play for a substantially longer amount of time, and maybe they can take up more of the CO2 without that effect as a consequence. And I suppose the sediment probably has nutrient value for coral, too, and must. It must have some nutrient value, even if it has just spared dead things or things that have recently died in the storm. So it's probably not a bad thing for the coral, but I'm guessing there.
Yeah. There we go. Thanks a lot for calling, Amy. Appreciate it. Marty in Shorewood, your turn. Hi, Marty.
Hey, guys. An observation and your perceptions of what I see as my marker for global warming. over the past roughly 15 to 18 years, spending a lot of time in Vilas and Oneida counties on the waters as a late season muskie fisherman, I think from my records, and I don't write them down, but my recollection is probably four, maybe five of those last 18 years has the water been frozen by November 30 at the end of the season.
Yeah.
Do you carry any studies along those lines? This is truly my marker for global warming, at least in the state of Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on?
There is one lake in Wisconsin that has probably been researched more than any other, and it's right in Madison.
Right. I don't think it's a probably. I think it is.
Yeah.
Lake
but,
Mendota.
But it's not just Lake Mendota, where, if you look at the data, it's great to make these observations and note them, but it's more important to write them down so that you could actually see whether it's your impression or what the real history is. And so they look at when it freezes and when it opens up again, and the amount of time that not just Lake Mendota, but lakes throughout the Northern Hemisphere are remaining frozen is getting shorter and shorter, and statistically significantly. I think we're like 3 weeks less than
just shy
what it
of
used
it.
To be.
Yep. Yeah. That's right, 18-point-something days. And John Magnuson in the Limnology Center did that study in the year 2000, and Mendota's been observed for lake ice duration since 1851, I think, and we've lost about 19 days on Lake Mendota.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. That's 20% of the season, actually.
Yeah. So I've always thought it's really bad if you're in, like to do ice fishing. But if you like to do musky fishing, maybe it's not so bad. I don't know.
It gets you out there at the...
It gets you to stay out there longer.
But it's still concerning, for sure.
Yeah. And it enhances evaporation out of the lakes, too, which is not
good.
That's
true. Which
in the wintertime, it can be rapid without an ice cover.
Thanks, Marty. Appreciate the call. Nancy in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Nancy.
Oh, good morning. Well, I hope we're not just done discussing El Nino, because my comment has to do with the fact that if the hurricanes this year were more substantial, more ferocious, speedier, just more terrible in every way, and if that could be attributed and was attributed to the excessive warmth of the Atlantic Ocean, then how could the Pacific Ocean not exhibit that same degree of warmth? Don't all oceans throughout the world eventually more or less flow into each other, just as air currents are constantly flowing?
They do, but in fact, just as you use a great example, Nancy, they have the fact that air currents flow from one place to the other doesn't guarantee that the temperatures at one place are the same as a temperature at another. So it's not so different in the ocean. The Pacific Ocean Basin is not completely separate from the Atlantic Ocean Basin, but there's a fair degree of separation. So things that go on in various locations in the Atlantic Basin may have no analog in the Pacific Basin, or vice versa. There's not much of an El Nino in the Atlantic Basin, for instance, but that's a really major oceanographic event in the Pacific Basin. So they have lots of different behaviors between the two, surprising as it might be.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah,
and they've been having their typhoons. I mean, typhoons are tropical storms that occur in the Pacific, or tropical cyclones. We don't call them hurricanes, we call them typhoons. And they've had some pretty nasty, strong Cat 5 typhoons as well.
But they don't occur on our shores, do they?
No, they usually hit the Philippines and sometimes southern Japan and places like that, and Taiwan. So they're in the West Pacific. Yeah.
Why would they hit there and not here?
Almost for the same reason the ones that form off the coast of Africa hit us. They all move in the tropics. The prevailing wind is from east to west, and so they form in the central Pacific and move to the west towards the Philippines and the islands of Southeast Asia.
Yeah, interesting. Nancy, thanks. Appreciate the call. John on Facebook says rising temperatures are definitely being recorded because of that. It would seem that increased evaporation would cause increased relative humidity readings. Is that the case?
Yeah. There is a relationship between the global average temperature and how much water vapor the atmosphere holds. Yeah, it goes up by about 7%, does it? RH goes up by 7% per degree of warming or something.
But of course, relative humidity gets a little tricky, right?
Yeah.
If you're going to evaporate water into the air, then that will increase the relative humidity. But if you increase the temperature of the air, that will decrease the relative humidity.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's a little tricky. That's why a lot of times we like to talk water content.
Betsy emailed to ask if this summer was warmer than usual. The high temperatures were lower, but the low temperatures seemed higher. Do you know how many 90-plus days we had this year and how many prior to September?
We had two prior to September, June 11th and 12th in Madison. Or 12th
easy to
and 13th.
Keep track of that, I guess.
It was very easy to keep track of them. Those were both muggy days, too. They weren't just warm. They were muggy. And then we didn't have a single other 90 until we got to this last week. Or maybe one other one. So we've had six total, I think.
And I think Milwaukee had its highest temperature for the year last on the first day
Friday.
Of fall.
That's right, on Saturday. They were 95, were they? Some ridiculous temperature.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe that was Friday. It might have been Friday they were 95.
95.
Yeah, I can't remember
and
which
Madison
day.
was right up there as well.
Madison's 92 on the 23rd, which was the first day of autumn, was the warmest day of the year.
And I think the Packers, I think that was the first.
That was the hottest game. First game in 90 degrees or above, right?
Yeah, for a league game. Yeah. It was the first game.
Wow.
It was the hottest game that the Packers ever had in a league game.
It was the hottest temperature-wise, not hottest in terms of playing ability.
Yeah.
It was hot, all right.
That's amazing.
Oh, man. Talking today with our two guests, Steve Ackerman, Director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies, a professor at UW. John Martin is a professor with him. And he is also John's former chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. Talking weather and climate with them, those are a couple of things we're talking about today. We're also talking about our fall membership drive. And your support is the foundation of our budget. Did you know that? It's what makes Wisconsin Public Radio your go-to place for great discussions, and we'll certainly continue to talk with Steve and John. But Chris Molina back with me, and he is here to help me encourage you to make your gift in support of the programs you count on. How do you do that? Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Chris, are we making progress?
Doing well, Larry. We are still looking for about 24 more pledges. That is about a pledge a minute until the end of the hour, and we can only do it with your help. We also heard from two brand new members. These are people who made their very first contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you so much for taking that important step from becoming a listener to becoming a member. Now, if you've been thinking about this for a while, well, now is a great time to support the station that you love.
If you've already given, thanks a lot. If you haven't, help pay for the programs you enjoy. Make your contribution right now. Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio has been around for a long time because we're committed to quality. We've been committed to quality for 100 years, and we want to do it for another 100 years. And since listener donations make up the single largest piece of our budget, well, that quality is possible thanks to you.
Your contribution makes this program possible and so many others as well. You're part of the quality you hear every day on WPR when you donate at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552.
You listen to WPR because you can count on unbiased reporting, interesting discussions, great music, hopefully a laugh every now and then. We've been having a good time here in the studio today. And you probably agree that Wisconsin is a better place because we all have access to high-quality news, entertainment programming, and this great service.
You are a listener, so I hope you'll take the next step and become a member. Your first ever donation of, say, $10 or $20 a month makes Wisconsin a place where great radio is available to everyone. So give now at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552.
I would say that if you really enjoy public radio and you listen to it even occasionally, if it does something to enlighten you on a certain point of view, then that is value. It's valuable. But nothing in life that is of value is truly free. Being a sustaining member, even if you just donate a small amount each month, you know, what it would cost you for a cup of coffee is really, really worth it if you believe in what they're doing. And I do. I'm John from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I encourage you to join me in sustaining Wisconsin Public Radio.
Make your donation in support of the programs you count on at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller here with Chris Molina, here to raise the money that keeps Wisconsin Public Radio, this program, on the air. Whether you pledge $10 or $20 a month, maybe you pledge $100 a month, we certainly appreciate and count on your gift.
And a $10 a month contribution to WPR works out to just 33 cents a day, which is a pretty great value.
That's a great value. Make a gift of $10 a month right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. and you're going to get a lot in return.
The Ideas Network keeps you informed and entertained every day. You enjoy Science Friday, Zorba Pastor on Your Health, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and also The Larry Mueller Show. Join Jeff and Jill from Pulaski, who say we are monthly sustainers, but we so enjoy The Larry Mueller Show, full of daily positive knowledge. We couldn't resist making an additional one-time donation. Thank you to Larry, his guests, and all of the WPR hosts. Thank you so much, Jeff and Jill. You know, people like Jeff and Jill, they've come to rely on programs like The Larry Mueller Show.
I think our shows give you a window on the world like no other, and I hope you're willing to support the exciting mix of shows you enjoy on the Ideas Network with your contribution. Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
We know that you've made the decision to listen to Wisconsin Public Radio. Now we're asking you to make the decision to support WPR financially. It's as simple as that. You can help. You can have the biggest difference when you make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
That's WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Taking a look at climate and weather today with our two guests, John Martin and Steve Ackerman, both from the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison. Steve is also director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at the UW. Phone in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. John in Green Bay has a question for us, so let's go there. John, hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning, and thanks for taking my call. Question I have with all the hurricanes is what happens to the salt in the water that's picked up by these hurricanes?
That's a great question. And so if you've lived on the coastline, which, you know, I grew up on Long Island, so you see this a lot. There's always salt in the air, little particles of salt. But with a hurricane with those winds, it really whips up foam and things like that, which then evaporate and leave pieces of salt in the atmosphere, which contribute to the formation of the raindrops. And so in order to form a cloud drop, it's a lot easier if you form it around something that's existing rather than trying to bring together a bunch of water molecules and automatically forming a water drop. And so these salt particles serve as what we call condensation nuclei. It's the beginning of where a cloud drop will form and then grow into a raindrop. And so then where the salt ends up depends on where the rain ends up. If it ends over land, then that's where it ends up.
And at Steve's point about this condensation nuclei, that salt particles are particularly potent versions of that because they dissolve in liquid water, too, and so it makes it much easier to form a big raindrop. But the water itself, the salt water, though the water is salty in the ocean, only the liquid water evaporates. The salt gets in the air by sea spray, and then we, you know, get a little bit of breaking water and thrown into the atmosphere, and then the water around the salt particles will evaporate away, and you get a few salt particles flying around. But the evaporation off the ocean surface actually makes the water more salty because it only evaporates water off of there. So it's really a complicated great question.
Yeah, very good. Thank you so much, John, for calling. Peter on Facebook posted a photo, and we're taking a look at it right now, and asks, these are really interesting clouds. He asks, what kind of pressure, humidity conditions create this type of cloud? He guesses they're about 10,000 feet an altitude up to 24,000 feet, and I'm not sure how to quite describe them.
Yeah, they look
like little trees coming out of the...
Almost like a little mushroom patch. Yeah, those are cumulus congestus, and he's looking at them from above the tops of the clouds. Those are, you could see these from the sky, these would be those little towers that go straight up on a day where you just know it's going to be convective later on, and it's muggy at the surface, and it's kind of a sweaty, summery day. They're beautiful from the top, as you're seeing in this picture, or from the ground, cumulus congestus clouds. And you can watch them grow in a
really
short amount
cool.
of time.
And the space between the clouds, you can see the ground, sort of.
Yeah,
very hazy.
Yeah, it's extremely hazy.
So I bet it's really humid. I don't know when that was taken. I don't think you put it on there. But I wonder if there was also smoke or something that moved into the area. And that'll help the cloud. Again, they'll serve as nuclei to get the cloud started.
Yeah, it's a really cool picture. It's on our Facebook page. You can take a look as you're listening. Josh in Deerfield has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Josh.
Well, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Question is, when the sun sets below the horizon, is there, in fact, once in a while I experience gusts of wind on a calm day? Is that really true? Does that happen?
When the sun sets?
Yeah, so when the sun sets below the horizon, is there a pressure differential created because of that we experience as gusts of wind?
I don't think you'll get much of a pressure gradient from that. When the sun sets below the horizon, generally you end up getting really calm conditions because it's not heating the surface and generating turbulence that would bring higher moving air above down to the surface.
Yeah,
usually after sunset, it calms down.
Yeah, the gusts actually come. It's a really good question. There's a lot of stuff embedded in that question. The gusts actually come from mixing, like Steve was just talking about. So when the sun goes down and the mixing gets reduced, very often the gustiness of the wind goes down. I'm not aware that there's any pressure change. I agree with Steve on that.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or phone put something up on our Facebook page. And if you got a great weather photo, we'd certainly love to see that as well. And we'll talk about it on the show. Cindy emailed to ask why we're having such hot weather. We kind of started on that, but let's go into a little more detail on that.
Yeah, that conspiracy of circumstances, as almost always the case with these kind of high-profile, unusual weather events. But we have a pretty deep trough of low pressure out over the Intermountain West. It's cold and dry in a lot of places out there. And then a fairly substantial and immovable ridge of higher pressure on the eastern part of the United States, over the eastern U.S. And in between those two places, there is very strong south-southwesterly flow coming right off the plateau of Mexico in the far western part of the Gulf of Mexico, straight up the gut of the continent over the Great Lakes, and we're right in the path. So we're stuck in strong southwesterly flow. It's always warmer to our southwest, so we just can't get out of being warm. And the humidity is also fairly substantial in that flow of air right now. So it's a combination of those things.
Yeah, it's interesting. Greg emailed and we'll get to that in just a minute, but let's go to Ted in Toma next, who has a question. Ted, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I just have a question going back to Harvey. I was watching that. It was like almost a week in advance they were predicting 3 feet, 4 feet, maybe even 5 feet of rain once it would finally get to the left. You know what I mean? They were so far ahead.
Yeah.
How are they coming up with those figures? And they were actually kind of right on.
Yeah. Hey, thank you, Ted. Yeah. They were right on. Right. And it's not the first time, actually, for these big hurricanes. This is a result of a nearly ceaseless investment over the last 50 or so years in numerical weather prediction, in satellites, in other kinds of observing systems, and in education. So we've got an incredibly well-educated group of people who work on the problem of trying to make forecasts of the weather on the finest scales, both in the tropics and the extratropics, and you have hit it right on the head. This is the benefit of that long-term investment that we knew long in advance, at least plenty of time in advance, to get people out of the way if there were mechanisms to do it. We're actually learning that we have to do better at providing mechanisms to get people out of the way, because we can give them so much warning, but we can't put them on train cars and get them out of Houston. It's not a forecast problem anymore. It's a logistical problem. It's remarkable, isn't it? And so these things are, that's the way we do it. And then we have observations on site to verify whether or not we were right. And this time we were largely right.
Yeah. So what were you actually using? Satellite imagery or what was giving you the information that you could use?
I think it's a combination of the data from both satellites as well as buoys and things like that, and combining that with improved numerical weather prediction models, and then having smart people do the interpretation to know whether the models are doing the right thing or overestimating something.
Yeah. So the basic answer comes out of the computer models, given all those observations.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
But you need people interpreting those models.
Oh, yeah.
Plus,
they weren't delivered on tablets from on high. Those things were constructed over a period of 50 years of toil and sweat. So they're human creations. Remarkable.
Greg emailed to give a shout out for the MSS satellite blog, the Tropical Cyclone blog, for such excellent coverage of recent hurricanes and providing access to the GOES 16 new imagery. How does he find the base GOES imagery access that's being shown on so many blog posts?
If you want to see the base ones, if you go to CIMSS, or just search on that, but it would be .ssec.wise.edu. Right there, we have our tropical webpage. And so you can go right there and see what they're putting out. Or you can just search on SSEC, and that'll give you the general satellite imagery that goes beyond whether or not there's a tropical cyclone there or
yeah.
not.
And we've got them on our department webpage, too, at www.aos.wisc.edu. And it's not operational yet, GOES 16. There's a bunch of things they want to work out.
Thank you
out,
for reminding me that.
But if you're a, say that. If you're a Wisconsin resident, they're sort of semi-operational because of the University of Wisconsin and SIMS and SSEC. So you can get them on a couple of different sites on our campus. Yeah.
Kenton Peshtigo, hi. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes. We had about 2 months ago some fairly strong winds in our area, and I was wondering what the difference between straight line winds and shear winds.
Okay. Straight line winds versus shear winds. Is there a difference?
I don't know if I've heard the term shear winds in association with severe weather. A straight line wind is just that you one imagines the wind speed and direction are fairly uniform across an area. There's no rotation or anything like that. Shear in our science means that you might not have rotation necessarily, but you might have differences in speed across some short distance that would create what almost looks like a vortex. It actually has characteristics of a vortex. So I don't really know if I know how that word's used in the context of severe weather systems. Do you know, Steve?
No, but I would think of it in terms of, so you have the straight line winds where everything gets blown down in one way, and then the other winds which have rotation, you need vertical wind shear in order to get those.
Yeah.
So maybe that's another
way. That could be the connection.
Could be
it.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Well, I'll tell you what. Speaking of speed, we got one of the fastest. If you want to go in a race with somebody, don't race against Chris Molina because he's the fastest guy. Talk about wind shear and high speed. He's the guy, and he's really good at helping with this Wisconsin Public Radio Fall membership drive as well. We call him Speedy Chris. And he's here to ask you to invest a few minutes of time to support your future WPR listening. So make a gift right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Now you're getting into the spirit, Larry. I love it. We're doing great so far this hour. We are on our way to meeting our hourly goal, but we do need your help to get us there, and we are almost there. So get your pledge in here in the next couple of minutes. Your pledge of any donation gets you on the board. Make that donation right now to support the programs that you enjoy, like the Larry Mueller Show at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
20 more pledges to go in the next 4 or 5 minutes here, so I hope you'll help us out. You know, this show, from 11 to 12:30 every weekday, we take a break from the news and from politics. We focus on advice, the outdoors, interesting things going on at the university, in the state. We talk health issues, finances a little bit, personal finances. And today, of course, we're talking about hurricanes.
And it's always educational. And we did hear from Alicia in Milwaukee who says, Larry Mueller's guests have taught me how to garden in the Milwaukee climate and soil, which is so different from the Illinois prairie that I grew up on. Thanks for all your local programming and to all the staff at WPR. Alicia, thank you so much. And I'm here to tell you that there is a not-so-secret ingredient to this winning recipe that we have here on the show, and that's listener support. That's your support. You make the program possible when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
WPR is personally important to you, and it's probably also important for you that everyone in the state has access to this high-quality information and entertainment.
So become a member with a contribution of, say, $10 or $20 a month, and you're not only going to do something good for yourself, you're going to do something good for the whole community. Give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
2017 marks WPR's first 100 years of broadcasting. And even though some of your favorite shows weren't around in 1917, what if they were?
Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, with President Woodrow Wilson's second term looming, we'll check in on what this could mean for the temperance movement.
We'll talk to a UW professor about the passing of Buffalo Bill Cody and the legacy he left behind.
And for Food Friday, we sample the hottest new food invention, marshmallow fluff.
That's a fad that's not going to catch on. It's all coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.
Okay, so maybe Central Time wasn't around to cover 1917, but we've been through a lot in our first 100 years, and it's all thanks to listeners like you. Here's to the next century of broadcasting, Help build our future now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Pledge right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller here with Chris Molina asking for your support of WPR during our fall membership drive. It might be a $10 a month gift or a $20 a month gift. Whatever amount you choose, that's really the right amount.
It's true, and we are looking for a few more pledges to help us stay on track this hour, to help us meet our goal, and it is your support that keeps WPR strong, and it helps pay for the Larry Mueller Show. So make your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Pledging to WPR is a quick and easy process. When you become a sustainer, you really simplify your donation. You make automatic monthly gifts from your bank account or your credit card.
It's really the best way to support Wisconsin Public Radio. It'll renew every year, so your membership always stays current. All you have to do is pick an amount that works for you, say $10 a month, and become a sustainer right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
About 20 more pledges to go in the next couple of minutes. We have a couple of minutes to get them. 2017 marks our 100 years of Wisconsin Public Radio. Your gift right now gives us a strong start to the next 100 years. Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
And consider making a pledge of $20 a month or more and get our new WPR travel mug. It's got a great design. It's going to keep your hot drinks hot and your cold drinks cold, and it looks great. Get it right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're going to be back with our two weather guests, John Martin and Steve Ackerman, but do your best right now to call 1-800-642-1234 or WPR.org. Talking weather and climate today on the program with our two guests. I'm Larry Mueller, by the way. My guests, John Martin and Steve Ackerman, both are in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison. Steve also directs the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies. Do you remember weather this warm, this late in the season? Maybe you have some questions about the weather. Maybe you've got a great photo you want to share on our Facebook page. I hope you'll do that. And I also hope you'll call in. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post your question or your photo on our Facebook page. And you know what, guys? I think we'll go right back to the phones. Terry and Antonagan has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Terry.
Hey, Larry. Great. I love when you have these guys on. I'm a weather geek, and so I love listening to them talk about all this stuff.
Wonderful.
As part of that, I look at Wonderground. I love maps, animated maps, weather forecasts, all that stuff. Have you ever heard of www.windy.com?
It's funny you say that, because over the weekend, a colleague of mine over in engineering emailed me that site and asked if we had anything to do with it. And yeah. I had to say, unfortunately, no. But it is a nice visualization of wind patterns, current wind patterns.
And they use all the different forecast models.
Right,
so you can select them and compare them, and it's just beautiful. During the hurricanes, the three hurricanes we had, it was amazing to go down and look at them.
Oh, right. I bet it was.
You could put in pressure. There's always also sea temperatures, sea currents.
you can change the base map.
I just get lost. I go around look at weather all around the world. And
yep, you're a geek.
You're a geek, Terry.
You can pull back. You can see the different latitudes, how the winds move. The doldrums, you know, the whole thing.
I don't think you can pull back, Terry. That's what it sounds like. But, no, I'm with you. I saw this come up on the screen. I hadn't seen it yet, so I just, during the break, was looking at that site. It's a really awesome site. You're right. You're right on about that.
Guy, he's a wind glider, helicopter pilot. He loves all that stuff, and so he, as a pet project, he and a couple guys started doing this. And they keep improving on it more.
Yeah, it's nice. It looks good.
You know, and as you're saying, it's easy to pull out so you can see the big circulation patterns and then zoom in so you can see what's driving.
Like anything, rain, probability, accumulation, you know.
Really
cool. I use it as my main thing now to look at forecasts.
And Steve, what is it again? People are now saying, wait a minute, I didn't hear
it's www.windy.com. Windy.com.
Windy, so W-I-N-D-Y. Windy.com.
So clearly a commercial company does it, which is fine.
All right, thanks, Terry. Yeah, appreciate it. All right, Windy. Kathy and Racine, your turn. Hi.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I love everything that you guys are doing. So with that said, I'm calling about the Farmer's Almanac. There's so many to choose from these days. I'm wondering if there's maybe one particular one that you would recommend, or you know, how accurate is it these days? Because with all the predictions and based on the technology, I'm thinking it's a little bit more accurate, or maybe it's just...
Yeah, John comes in with that in his back pocket all the time. Yeah, so whenever there's a question about the winter, he pulls that out and
John hates refers
the, to, he hates Kathy, the Farmer's Almanac. I just want to tell you, I love reading the Farmer's Almanac, and I'll tell you why. I love reading everything except the weather. When I was a kid, I used to get so excited when I would read this before I knew a little bit more than I do now. That, oh man, you know, we're going to get a snowstorm right around Christmas. We're going to get another one 10 days later. It was like talking to my friend down the street who loved the winter as much as I did. The thing is, got no accuracy at all. In fact, if you really want to have fun with it, and, but otherwise it's a great book. I really mean that. I love reading all the stuff, all sorts of the folk stuff and other history stuff.
It's actually wonderful. I love it.
Yeah, it's a great book. So I don't disparage the book. But their weather forecasting stuff is a joke, and I wish that someday I'm going to do it myself. I'll keep track exactly and report back at the end of the year how bad the forecasts actually were, because there's no science in it at all. But it's for fun.
Yeah, so, it's for fun.
And then the only thing you can really see are the squirrels gathering all the nuts.
Yeah, but the squirrels, listen. These are rodents who barely know that they have hands, okay? They're not going to be able to have some preternatural understanding of what's coming in the wintertime. They can't. Just like the groundhog has no idea what's coming.
Well, what about the woolly bears?
Now, they know nothing. They don't even know enough to get off your sidewalk and spare themselves getting stepped on. They know nothing.
Thank you, guys. Have a good day.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. I don't know, those woolly bears.
All right, I'm better now.
Oh, man. Robin Arena, your turn. Hi, Rob.
Hey, thanks, guys, for taking my call. This was last year. We were about 20 yards from shore at Castle Rock Lake by the Dells.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, we saw the water start to dance from the shore, come across our pontoon boat, and we just got pelted in the face with vertical rain. Now, this was a cloudless day. And it was so strong that it opened up the back hatch of the pontoon boat and lifted an empty garbage bag, I don't know, 30 feet in the air. It was just amazing.
Wow. So it was wind as well.
Yep. It was very local. You could see this, circle of, I'm going to call dancing water.
Yeah, this was a little bit of a water spout, I'm guessing. Obvious water spout that you saw. Wow, it's a water spout. You just saw the kind of rippling on the water, and something was pulled up out of the water by the circulation, and it looked like it was dropping rain on you, because I don't see how else you could make sense of that.
Yeah, right.
And in that part of the world, steep cliffs and so on around the sides of the lake, it's not hard to imagine on a really nice summer day you could get a little bit of a whirlwind that would do that.
Oh,
I wonder
that's it.
Yeah, that's... Wow. The only other thing I was thinking of, but this doesn't make sense given what you just described, is something like this happened to me when I was in Colorado playing basketball outside, and it was a beautiful, clear sky day, and then all of a sudden these big raindrops began to fall on us. and, you know, then, you know, afterwards I went back and looked at, you know, some of the data that we had collected, and it turns out that there was a thunderstorm nearby.
Hailstones.
And so the hailstones were just being thrown out.
Rogue hailstones.
Back of it, and then melting before they hit the ground.
Amazing.
It was really weird. But it was very calm. It was not windy like what you're describing.
Yeah. No.
I like John's suggestion.
Yeah.
It wasn't
Chris Molina hiding with a hose.
Could have been. We know he's fast. He could have got there and left. Without...
There we go. Rob, thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, I like John's idea, too. I've actually had something similar to that when I was musky fishing once, too.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I'd love to have something like that happen to me.
Yeah. Clear day.
It's really weird.
Nick in Edgerton has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Nick.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. These two guests you got there are some of the more entertaining guests you have.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I went to UW-Madison Farm and Industry short course back in the 2000s, and they taught us about a term called growing degree days.
Yeah.
Can you remind me what those are and how is this year doing in growing degree days compared to other years? And with the warm spell, are we like catching up on those?
Yeah.
So I think we're doing pretty good. So the growing degree days are, they differ for each crop. You know, crops have good temperatures at which they're going to grow at, and other temperatures, if it gets too hot, they won't grow. If it's too cold, they won't grow. And so the growing degree days are a measure of that. It's accumulation starting with the growing season. And then before you reach maturity, depending on the crop, you need so many of these growing degree days, which often, for example, is how many times in an hour was it, or averaged over an hour, was the temperature above like 65
yeah,
or something
yeah.
like that. And if it's 67, then that's two that gets summed up. So I think we're doing okay, although I'm not...
That's probably right. And like you said, it's crop specific. I know that I've heard a lot in the last week or so when it's been warm and the first few days were dry, not the last couple, but no rain. That's good for the corn to dry it out. So I guess it's characteristically a good time to be dry.
Yeah. Related to this, which I just learned recently, but it now makes sense, is that, you know, we talk about growing degree days, so you need warmth to do it. Some trees need also a cooling period. And so like fruit trees in particular. And so if it doesn't get below, like I think for peaches, and you'll see why I'm picking peaches, less than 45 degrees for a certain amount of time, those trees can't produce peaches very well the next season.
Wow.
And so Georgia, 2 years in a row, did not accumulate enough of those cooling degree days in the wintertime. And so if you're wondering why you haven't seen many Georgia peaches, this is why. The production was half of what it was the last couple of years.
Because it didn't get cold enough long enough.
Because it didn't get cold enough long enough.
Wow.
I did not know that.
Nature's
got
tricks.
Learned that. It's just like, whoa.
That's pretty neat.
So the price of peaches is really high.
Yeah. You notice Well, and orange juice is going to go through the roof, too, after Irma.
After the
so.
Right.
Man.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that, but you're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well,
so,
Nick,
hopefully we asked you a question about growing degree days.
You're getting more than you asked for here, Nick.
All right, thank you for your call.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. You know, we haven't, I was thinking back to the season, the tornado season in Wisconsin this year, and somehow it just doesn't seem like we had as many tornadoes, or I don't remember as many, like, really serious. Now, there were some, but...
Yeah, they didn't seem to make high-profile news this year. We had a really wet, persistently wet July, relatively cool August, although it wasn't below normal. It was just not very warm. And then only warm in September here at the end. So it just wasn't the kind
Actually,
of the right
I,
winter
I forgot
for it.
How wet July was.
Yeah,
July
it rained
was really
a lot.
Wet.
We had 20 days, I think, on which it rained, out of 31 or something like that.
It was great for my garden, anyway, my vegetable garden.
No, that's good.
I had my straw bales. I didn't have to water them very much.
Yeah.
In fact, I didn't water them at all, I don't think, in the whole month of July. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah, but for me, I got out of the habit. And so now all my flowers and grass are all dying. I just like just
been
watered it.
Bone. Yeah, it's been dry as a bone since early August.
What somebody, John, I think, wondered, what is it like to... For those who went through the eye of a hurricane, let's go back to hurricanes for just a minute, because that eye...
It gets calm.
Yep. The winds die down.
And if it's stacked vertically and it's nighttime, you could probably go out, and not that I would recommend going out, and look up and see stars.
Yeah, there's lots of bright spots. I mean, you can see it's brilliantly on the satellite materials that Steve knows so much about, that you can see right down to the ground, whether you're looking at it in the thermal infrared or in the visible. It's just amazing. It's clear as day. And that's gentle subsidence. Sometimes with these high-resolution GOES 16 images, too, in Irma, we could see cirrus clouds from the canopy of the hurricane being sucked into the middle of the storm, because that's how it clears out. The air is descending in the middle of the hurricane. That's why it's clear. And sometimes at a fairly vigorous rate. Pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it really
so
is.
How big would that eye be?
It varies from storm to storm. I think with Maria, it was pretty small.
It was pretty tiny,
30 miles wide. And then with Irma or Katrina, big storms, it's sometimes 60 or 70 miles wide. So I don't know what the ratio actually is, the range. It might be as much as 100 or so miles in some big ones.
Some of the big ones.
And we've had more than one question about what's the weather going to be like in Wisconsin for fall. What are you guys just kind of... thinking ahead, looking at what's out there.
Hopefully it cools down, because I don't like this.
Well,
personally.
In fact, it makes it safe to say, neither do I. It makes it safe to say if we have a normal October, people are going
to
say it's cold. Because we've been
so
warm here at the end of September. So I'm going to say it's going to be cool.
What's a normal for
Right now, the average high is 62 or 63, I believe, yeah. And the average low is in the mid-40s. And so we were 30 degrees or just about 30 degrees above normal for Saturday. Oh. 30 degrees. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. And then humidity, too. It's just...
Yeah. If you're 30 degrees above normal in early July, you're at 112 degrees.
So we've been there, too. Not this year.
But it almost never happens. So it's just amazing. Very rare.
And one more question here from Hans in Manitowoc. Hi, what's on your mind?
Hi. So this is maybe more of a mechanical question than science, so apologies if it's not really your wheelhouse. But I've always wondered how they can predict when rivers will crest after we've had a lot of rain.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah, that's a good question. And one reason I know that I've monitored anyway, just because it's interesting, is that they have gauges on all these rivers. And so when you, for example, when we had a year, I can't remember the year now, but we got a lot of rain up here in on the Mississippi watershed. Mm-hmm. And then you could just track that in the rain gauges as it moved downstream.
Yeah, that's right.
And so as you just do that, you know, I mean, it's almost like, you know, measuring how far has it moved in a given day, and then just project that down the road. That's one way to do it. I'm
sure
they have
probably
much more
the predominant way
sophisticated
to do it.
Modeling as well. But it's really neat to watch. You know, at this particular time, again, we had our daughter who was living in New Orleans. You know, so that's why I was really tracking it to find out when is all that water going to get down to New Orleans. And then it turns out they opened up some of the dams and flooded part of Missouri in order to prevent the big crest from hitting New Orleans.
Oh, interesting.
That happy note. Man, John Martin, a professor and former chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison, one of our guests, the other, Steve Ackerman, director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW, our guests here today on the Ideas Network. And you know what? Chris Molina came wandering through again, so we're going to spend a minute or two talking with you about our fun drive here. You count on the Ideas Network for great discussions, and it's your gift, any amount, that makes these discussions possible. So I hope you'll give right now at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. And another goal.
Another goal, Larry. We are looking for about 20 or 15 pledges before the end of the show. We've already got a couple in the door. We've already got six pledges so far. So thank you so much if you've already given. But we do have the new goal, and we're hoping to hit it.
We are celebrating our first 100 years. It's a great time to support the station that you love. You can help us meet our goal right now and start the next 100 years strong with your centennial gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You've been enjoying this great conversation about weather, about hurricane activity. And I got to tell you, Larry, one thing that impresses me most about your show is, you know, so I'm behind the scenes here. I'm producing. I write interview questions day in, day out for you, for the other hosts. And I write stuff. And then your listeners call in, and they call in with questions that I wouldn't have thought of in a million years.
Absolutely.
And it makes, you know, producing the show so easy because I know that listeners always have my back. And this happens day in, day out. And this program that you've been listening to is an example of an informative, a timely conversation that we have and that you participate in.
And I hope you'll take a few minutes right now to make this show and many more shows possible. Just choose a gift amount that works for you, and then go ahead and make your pledge at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552.
And the cool part is that WPR works on the honor system. You don't have to pay for it, but when you do choose to support it, you make all the WPR programs you enjoy possible. So with that in mind, how about a pledge right now of $10 a month?
You decide the amount and then go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
When you listen to the Ideas Network, you get great advice from all kinds of experts, whether it be the weather guys, whether it be a veterinarian, an animal behaviorist, and what's the cost to you? These are things that if you, you know, went out and sought someone, it might be sort of expensive. In this case, over the radio, well, you pick. The Ideas Network is your source for helpful information, and you get to put a price on it. So support it right now with a pledge of any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you're looking for the best way to make a gift to WPR, become a sustaining member. As a sustainer, you'll make automatic monthly contributions from your bank account or your credit card. A lot of people do that.
A lot of people do it because it's the easiest way to support Wisconsin Public Radio, and it's the best way because your support is going to be there all year long. So consider making a sustaining pledge of $10 or $15 a month, and that means reliable funding for your radio station all year long. So become a sustainer right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Ready? 1, 2, 3. This drive, we're offering a special thank you gift, the all-new 16-ounce WPR travel mug. We asked a few people, what will you drink in your travel mug?
I would put some black tea in my travel mug, and then I would put it in my bike bag and commute to work.
I put coffee in them, and I don't wash them for at least 6 months. It gets a nice crust in there, and it's like a good pipe, you know?
I put iced tea in travel mugs. I put water in travel mugs. Travel mugs are not only for coffee. I'm just putting it out there.
Ask for your WPR travel mug when you give $20 a month or more right now.
Nobody mentioned beer or margaritas in their travel mugs.
They may have, but the pledge people probably took that out.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I mentioned that then.
You noticed that my voice was not on there.
I hope you'll go to WPR.org or phone. Well, it's just another idea. WPR.org or phone, 888-202-2552. Make your pledge during this fall membership drive. Larry Mueller here with Chris Molina asking for your support of WPR and your gift of 10 or 15 or 20 bucks a month, whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount.
And it's so important. We are looking for 9 more pledges. In the next couple of minutes or so, you could be our next member, and we'd love for you to be our next member. And it's such a great time to support the station that you love.
Thank you if you've already given. If you haven't, help pay for those programs you enjoy. Make your contribution right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
We toss the term public radio around, but it's worth backing up and considering that public radio means listener-supported radio.
And while we do appreciate business contributions and certainly federal and state tax dollars, listener support is still the largest source of WPR's budget. Your contribution, any amount, really matters at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
And we can't thank you enough for spending time with Wisconsin Public Radio today. Whether you found us by scanning the dial or a friend recommended the great discussions, you're still tuned in because you like what you hear.
Because you like what you hear, I hope you'll help pay for your WPR listening. You choose the right amount, 10, 20 bucks a month. A great starting point, or whatever's comfortable for you. You can become our next new member at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And speaking of new members, Larry, maybe, you know, someone's out there and they're listening and they're thinking, I don't know, maybe. Well, now is a great time to do it. Show your support for the Larry Mueller Show, for all the programs that you listen to all week, all month, all year long. All we're asking is make that first ever pledge of, let's say, $5 or $10 a month, or whatever amount is right for you, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you haven't given yet, you can join thousands of other wonderful WPR members by donating at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
It's easy to do. It's only going to take a few minutes of your time, and you're going to get great programs all year long in return. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
9 more pledges to go. We have just a couple of minutes to go before the end of this program. I hope you will put a vote in right now for the programming that you hear from 11 to 12:30 every single day. I think we provide a kind of a unique look at a lot of different things that are educational, and they're also a lot of fun. So if you haven't given yet, now is the time to do it. You can get started right now. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. And thanks if you've already contributed. If not, do it right now.